It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 28th day of August, 2023. This is The Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you want to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza. That is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the Great Globe Round. Whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. Either way, live, podcast, what have you, thanks for being part of this amazing little community of plugged in, informed, civically engaged, folks. No, really, thank you. If you are listening live right here, right now, this program is live, well, feel free to jump, pop over to the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, and, well, when you pop in, you'll see that you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That's Irish Dave and Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo. Hi, y'all. Good to see you. Hope you had a great weekend. And capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger in Oregon. And we're still all a titter to hear about Roger's high school reunion and maybe even a little bit about the camping trip and how the garden's doing. So maybe next Friday, this Friday, which incidentally will be September the 1st. And I had mentioned as a program note last week that I anticipated not being here on Thursday and Friday, so that we could go down to Tennessee, Annette will go with me, and see the, see the grandbabies, and help out with Ferg and my lovely daughter-in-law. Now, as they say in football, upon further review, we've decided that we're going to do that on, we'll get out of here early Saturday morning, and we'll be back early on Monday. Monday is Labor Day, a week from today, of course, is Labor Day. And I got a call from Malloy. Actually, I got a text message. And I will be covering for Malloy. I'm going to reach out to the one and only, the incomparable Tara Devlin of TaraBuster, and see if she would like to join me in subbing for Mike, filling in. I hope she says yes, because our conversations are always a delight. And, so Labor Day weekend's not going to be big bunch of carrying on or anything. I don't guess. So anyway, we're not going to have any preemptions or interruptions of the program schedule this week. That was my only point there. Hi, I'm Robin. And by the way, if you're listening to the podcast, pretty please do us a favor. By us, I mean the entire community, because we love to see new folks pop in and join our merry band. We happy few. Subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform where you take it, whether it be Apple Podcasts or, iHeartRadio or Spotify or Podcast Republic or Google Podcasts or any of them, because we're available on all of them. Subscribe, and please leave a comment if you feel effusive and want to tell people how much you enjoy the program. Do that, or just say hi to the algorithms. But it all helps to grow the program, and that's big because, there's no advertising or PR budget here. The best that we have is word of mouth, and word of mouth is always the best advertising. So the more y'all talk about how awesome this is, because it is, now the better it is. So thanks for that. It is Moran Monday. We have plenty of Moran material. We also have blood-soaked material. But before we dive in, I hope everybody had a good weekend. This was the last weekend of the last full month of summer of 2023. Seems like I spend so much time pining. We pine a lot here in Appalachia. I spend so much time pining for the warmth and goodness of spring and summer. And it just flies by so quickly. I swear one of these days I'm going to have to put a French fry lamp in here just to get over the seasonal affective disorder syndrome. Yeah, 3 hours should be good enough, right? Yeah. But even though it was kind of rainy, Annette and I had a lovely weekend. Just homebodies, didn't really do anything. Went and did some grocery shopping. And yesterday I wanted to do something really nice for her because she spends a lot of her energy doing really nice things for me. And so I had found some beef on Manager's Special up at the Wiggling Pig. And I just happened to have a can of crap way back in the refrigerator. And Friday was the last day at the roadside stand for fresh produce. I guess the Mennonites are plowing things under over in Ohio. They're plowing things under and getting ready for the fallow season and, I don't know, harness mending and quilt making and what have you. But I did up, I was proud of myself. It was just simple country fare, but I gave it a little bougie twist. The corn and green beans and onions were braised in a white wine and butter sauce, just under the dome of a skillet, very low heat. Turn them once in a while. Gorgeous green colors popped out, the yellow of the corn. And we had new potatoes, so I scrubbed and split those and did something I hadn't done in rather a long time. I made my buttermilk dill cream sauce. Hoo-wee. I realized something. That could form the basis of a darn fine cream soup. Really, I mean, and the funny thing is, it's kind of hard to work with buttermilk that way because it will break up, kind of like the way a real hollandaise sauce will break up. And it didn't break. It's freaking delicious. So if you want to know how to do it, just shoot me a note and I'll walk you through the process, because the tart, tangy flavor and wonderful. And I was going to, the whole idea was to do steak Dion, but, well, Annette said she wasn't down for the béarnaise sauce, so, you know, what she said went. So it was just crab cakes, and it was kind of a hillbilly surf and turf. Crab cakes and that lovely beef and those wonderful vegetables, and we just had a beautiful day puttering around the house. Kind of put things, to the extent possible, we put things to the side and just took joy in our own company, laughed and carried on. Long about, I think it was 5, I put dinner on the table. And she said it was absolutely delicious, and I'll make somebody a great little wife someday. Never mind. But I hadn't done any food porn in a long time. And so it was nice to get back to puttering around in the kitchen. We're slowly getting used to to the empty nest, and means we're clearing out some spaces and finding things, and because, you know, when you got babies in the house, there's a lot of chaos. And so we're getting things in nice order now. And that, you know,
that was our weekend in Mount Colby gone.
Right. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out to our 26th, 27th, and 28th day of the month subscribers. That means thanks to Mark, working backwards, and thank you to Suman, who taught me how to say Wewek, or Wewake, instead of the mispronunciation that the entire multi-millionaire for-profit media are engaging in. Thank you, Mark and Charlene and Rogues Island. Thank you to Sharon. Thanks as well to David and Oregon. Thank you to Emilio and Ralphs. And thank you to Sandra. Thank you, Sandra. Yesterday, God bless America, the hiccups, really? Oh, I need to stop drinking so much gin before the program. But Sandra said simply, remembering Scott from San Diego. Thank you, Sandra, there on the Virginia coast. Thank you so very much. And so we find ourselves with 4 days left in the month of August. And we are at $1,800 in the hole. $1,800 is the fundraising deficit. And it makes it a mighty steep uphill climb. So anybody who wants to jump in, and I know the live audience, you know, y'all do a lot. Everybody does everything that they can. But this is just a matter of keeping this all going. So, golly, $1,800 means all of last week is unfunded, and today is unfunded. Maybe we can take a bite out of it. If we got last Monday funded, or miracle of miracles, last Monday and Tuesday funded, it would be fantastic, because, well, every month my goal is to buy some health insurance. And every month it's maybe next month. And, of course, there's a power bill to deal with. The fine folks at my coal-fired power grid, rickety and rusty and busted and antiquated and halfway falling apart. Well, they want $400, and there's the internet service provider, and you know, they're hungry too, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if we took that all together, you know, assume that health insurance is going to be somewhere around maybe $400 to $500 and whatever. Just trying to lay it out there where things are. But this is more in Monday. But we can't really go. We can't really go directly to the wackiness that is more in Monday, because we had another outbreak of Second Amendment freedom to talk about over the weekend. And it was a horror, as are they all. This time, the lawful gun owner left no doubts. He offed himself, of course. Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's go ahead and dive into the trauma and be methodical about it. Jacksonville, Florida, which our pal Joy in Ann Arbor, who once lived there for a time, said, I see it's still as shitty as it was back when I was there. There is a historically black college in Jacksonville. And that's where the murderer went first. Put on a tactical vest, a mask, was armed with, of course, the weapon of choice of every young white Nazi murderer in the country, namely an AR-15. Oh, God. You know, when Gandhi was murdered, it is said that his last words were, "Hai Ram," which I understand to be translated as, "Oh, God." Also over the weekend, there was the 60th anniversary march of the March on Washington, in which Dr. King delivered his I Have a Dream speech and gave white people for generations to come the only line that they would ever care about that he said, wherein people were to be judged on the content of their character and not the color of their skin. Say! And we saw the toxic consequences of that this summer with our most puissant Dred Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesty striking down affirmative action. We may yet get to that, too, because lo and behold, there's a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian white man who's going after every kind of diversity, equity, and inclusion program that he can get his hands on. But back to what happened in Jacksonville. He started out at Edward Waters University, There were about 1,000 students there. A security guard saw him on campus, and when he refused to identify himself, said, "Well, you're going to have to leave." And as he prepared to drive away, he put on his bulletproof vest and his tactical terrorist mask. Jacksonville Sheriff T.K. Waters said he didn't think he was going to attack the school. God. The 21-year-old white boy was identified as Ryan Palmiter from neighboring Clay County. And even though 21-year-old Ryan Palmiter had been involuntarily committed in Florida on a 72-hour mental health hold back in 2017, and even though he had a domestic violence incident that the cops chose not to arrest him for, well, 21-year-old Ryan Palmiter was able to legally purchase a Glock handgun and an AR-15. Yeah, it's a lot of money. I'm not trying to... It just is. That's at least around $1,000 worth of guns that he got his hands on. Both the money and the guns. And he was a Nazi. And he wanted to make sure everybody understood what a Nazi he was. He left notes for his family, federal law enforcement, a media outlet. He painted swastikas on his gun. Spoke plainly and clearly in his writings about the hatred he felt bone deep for people of color. Black folks. I don't know. Maybe he wouldn't have hated Wee Wake Ramaswamy. But he left. He left Edward Waters University when confronted. And went a few blocks down to a... Because he didn't want to shoot it out with anybody. He was a chicken shit Nazi. And so he went where he knew people would be defenseless. The local Dollar General. And he walked into the Dollar General with his mask and his tactical vest on. And murdered Angela Michelle Carr, aged 52, who was just sitting in her car. He murdered employee A.J. Laguerre, a 19-year-old young man who tried to run away. And he shot Gerald Gallion, a 29-year-old young man, as he walked into the store. Then he ran back and barricaded himself in an office, and when police arrived, I guess saved the people of Duval County, Florida, the cost of a trial. He left a will. This little Nazi piece of shit did. He sent a text to his daddy saying, "Break into my bedroom. and check my computer. And of course, it's Florida. Florida fascist governor Ron Monkey Up DeSantis declared that no one should be no one should be targeted because of the color of their skin. No one should be discriminated against based on the color of their skin, which, you know, has been his entire career, especially since he began his second term as governor. Monkey Up went on to say, "This guy killed people himself rather than face the music and accept responsibility for his actions. He took the coward's way out." Because Ron Monkey Up DeSantis is a goddamn robot. And a malfunctioning one at that. We don't have any word as to whether Ryan Perlmutter knew that the 60th anniversary march in Washington was taking place. Sometimes timing just works out as a function of the inscrutable workings of the goddess of irony. Attorney General Merrick Garland said no person in this country should have to live in fear of hate-fueled violence, and no family should have to grieve the loss of a loved one to bigotry and hate. One of the Justice Department's first priorities upon its founding in 1870 was to... See, and this, when I read this quote, it got me a little worked up. One of the Justice Department's first priorities upon its founding in 1870 was to bring to justice white supremacists who used violence to terrorize black Americans. That remains our urgent charge today. The Justice Department will never stop working to protect everyone in our country from unlawful acts of hate. Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump stands indicted for a violation of the Klan Act, a piece of legislation drafted, passed, and signed into law for the specific purpose of combating racist terrorism in this country. Used to good effect, oddly enough, by the federal government, up until the ascension of Rutherford B. Hayes as President of the United States over Samuel Tilden. Rutherford B. Hayes becoming president, of course, as a result of an agreement struck that if the Congress let Rutherford B. Hayes be President of the United States, that he would end Reconstruction, in which the federal government was actively involved in occupying the South and ensuring the rights of recently freed persons. Without fear of terrorism. But America had had enough. White America had had white enough of common decency and human dignity and trying to live up to the principles and precepts of the Declaration of Independence, you know, the non-racist parts, and the guarantees afforded under the Constitution of the United States, you know, despite that three-fifths clause. Yeah, Ralph's noting, DeSantis. No one should be killed on the color of their skin or the content of their character. Eep. I think I have that right, says Ralphs. Grr. Yeah, you do. You do, Ralphs. So the universe ended for three individuals. Their families left forever to grieve. No justice to be had. No closure. No punishment. And because he was a lawful gun owner, no accountability to be had. Because remember, he said,
"Dad, break into my room and look on my computer."
Another white boy living at home with guns. Mom, Dad, was any of that troubling to you? The Justice Department will never stop working to protect everyone in our country from unlawful acts of hate. So far, they're not doing a great job. I mean, if you're like 1 for 10, really, you're not doing a great job. Although, to be fair, and we are fair, if nothing else here, police at University of North Carolina Health made a call. Police responded. The entire UNC campus shut down. It was apparently earlier today, about 1 o'clock. The Daily Tar Heel says one shot was fired, one person reported injured. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper said,
"My office is in communication with law enforcement and officials at UNC Chapel Hill who are taking precautions to protect campus safety following today's shooting. This is a tragic way to start a new semester."
Really, Governor?
"And the state will provide any assistance necessary to support the UNC community."
In this case, the shooter, the person of interest, is Tyle Key, a graduate student at UNC, who had also been a student at Louisiana State University, and before that, Wuhan University. He has been taken into custody. UNC police making the announcement. They found the Asian guy. But, well, you know, that's North Carolina. On the other hand, in Monkey Up Duplantis's, and more importantly, the National Rifle Association's Florida, 21-year-old white boy walking around strapped with an AR-15 is no cause for concern because that's just another day in Florida, or West Virginia, or Texas, or Georgia, or Alabama, or Louisiana, or Mississippi, or Tennessee. Remember, the Covenant School shooter was just walking down, drove down, got out of the car, put on a rifle, went walking up to the school. And this goes all the way back to something that I remember having a conversation with Kevin in Colorado Springs about years ago. The people who called in to the cops saying, "Hey, there's a guy wandering around out here strapped with an AR-15, and he might hurt somebody." And the cop said,
"Well, that person has an absolute right to walk around with an AR-15 because here in Colorado, we believe in freedom under the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. It's in the Constitution."
Everybody. It's impossible, but everybody in a mass shooting in this country needs to be taken first to the doorstep of the National Rifle Association and left there for whoever's running the largest, most well-funded domestic terror organization in the United States to have to climb over to get into work. Jacksonville Mayor Donna Deegan said of the shooting, "I've heard some people say that some of the rhetoric that we hear doesn't really represent what's in people's hearts. It's just the game. It's just the political game. Those three people who lost their lives, Mayor, they didn't lose their lives. It's not like they fell through a hole. Their lives fell through a hole in their pockets. Their lives were stolen from them. That's not a game," she said. "That's the reality of what we're dealing with. Please let us stop viewing each other as pieces on a game board, and let us please start to see each other's humanity." Kumbaya, my Lord. Kumbaya. Kumbaya, my Lord. Kumbaya. It's not that we're not seeing each other's humanity. It is that there is a weaponized segment of this society comprised primarily of disaffected young white men with easy access to weapons of war, who are weaponized, radicalized through neo-Nazism, white nationalism, alt this, alt that, through the manosphere, incels, I mean... You gotta wonder if Ryan Perlmutter, age 21, living in his parents' house, gotta wonder how long it had been since that boy had been on a date, or what he thinks a date would constitute. I'm sorry, I see disaffected, murderous white boys, and I immediately think incel. Because the overlap is almost a plain circle. Representative Angie Nix, and a member of the Florida House of Representatives, said, "We must be clear, it was not just racially motivated, it was racist violence that has been perpetuated by rhetoric and policies designed to attack black people, period. Thank you, ma'am." And there is a certain amount of trauma that ripples through this nation. It may have happened in Monkey Ups, Florida, but it almost happened in North Carolina, apparently. A fan of Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh slaughtered an LGBTQ ally last weekend in California. There is no safe place in America. Every state is touched by this disease. LaTanya Thomas lives in Jacksonville, Florida. She was riding a charter bus home from D.C., having attended the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington for jobs and freedom. She told the Associated Press it made the march even more important because, of course, gun violence and things of that nature seem so casual now. Now you have employees, customers that will never go home. And she's right. What do we, what is this like the people after a tornado being interviewed? "Well, yes, thank God it didn't kill me. It only killed my neighbor." And I'm not criticizing Ms. Thomas. I'm not. But the only solace, if we can even call it that, we have in this is, well, you know, you had enough bullets there to kill 150, 200 people.
At least he didn't get to do that.
Sorry. Cold comfort. And so, President Biden reacted today, saying we can't let hate prevail, and it's on the rise, it's not diminishing. Silence, I believe, we've all said many times, silence is complicity. We're not going to remain silent, and so we have to act against this hate-fueled violence. He had been meeting with the family of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Following the march this weekend. Someone asked him, "Well, how are you gonna stop the hatred?" President Biden said, "By talking directly to the American people, because I think the vast majority of the American people agree with this table, but we have to understand this is serious." Vice President Kamala Harris was there as well, and she said, "Yet there are those." She said, "You know, most people are decent people," and I agree with her. And have more in common with each other than whatever divides them. But she added, with a dose of reality, "Yet there are those who are intentionally trying to divide us as a nation, and I believe each of us has a duty not to allow factions to sever our unity. Our diversity is our strength, and our unity is our power as a nation. And I do believe that we must be guided by knowing that we have so much more in common than what separates us." Good. Sure. Steve, by the way, in New York says, "Move on. Nothing to see here. Nothing I write here is unique, insightful, or in anything that anyone listening tonight hasn't thought of or said to themselves or said to someone else out loud." The death wheel stopped yesterday in Jacksonville. We heard the mantras, "This isn't us," and "Racism has no place in America," and so on and so on. And we're going to hear the "Say Their Names" mantras, or the "This is not the time to politicize this" aphorism, or "The only way to defeat a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun," or "The guy was just mentally ill." That's pretty much the whole checklist, Steve. Well, when I listened to this, I laughed a macabre laugh, wondering, one, did the speaker of these words actually believe them? Two, did the speaker of these words surreptitiously turn on a device they had hidden inside their mouths, which bellowed a recorded message? Three, did the speaker say these things in a cynical ploy to raise cash money off of the blood of three dead people, or four, some other reason? Either way, I'm very serious when I ask this question. Why exactly do we even talk about these incidents? What are we going to say that we haven't said before, whether it is about the shooter, the victims, the families, etc.? The only thing that was different this time is that the sheriff, and rightfully so, expressed the hate-filled sentiment of the killer when he referred to our black brothers and sisters as, he used the word, "I'm not gonna." But yeah, that was a big deal. The sheriff of Jacksonville used the N-word in context as the murderer had used them. Steve says, "Robin, I cringe even writing that word." I understand. I felt viscerally ill. But you know what? That's really the only difference in the way that sheriff referred to the killer from what other people have said before. And frankly, that's not really that big of a deal because, you guessed it, we've all been here before. Guess what? I'm there. Really don't see any reason to talk about these incidents. I'm just going to move on. Nothing to see here because there isn't. I have to disagree, Steve. For the sake of my own sanity and the sake of my own soul, I have to disagree. Silence in the face of this is what organizations like the NRA and what Gun Owners of America want. They want us silent in the face of their terrorism. And because of recent events, because I think about things like this, you know, we talk together for about 3 hours every evening, Monday through Friday. And maybe I need to do better by my own mental health, but I think about things the rest of the time I'm not behind the microphone. And within the short span of this month of August, 2023, we have seen for the first time in American history a former president of the United States indicted for a violation of the Klan Act. And we're still not doing that great a job up over in the multimillionaire for-profit media of saying Klan Act. Maybe there's been some high-level decision made by the suits that saying Klan Act would be deleterious to the case because the maggots would sit, you know, the maggots who aren't even watching MSNBC or CNN are sitting there bobbing back and forth, Emery and Marveline in their matching Barca loungers down at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Court and Country Club.
Emery, how could they do that? He ain't even a member of the Klan. That can't possibly be a real charge.
It ain't, Marveline. They're just going after him. They won't give that poor man no peace, and all he wanted to do is make America great again. Flavio tells me that Florida Representative Angie Nixon broke down on MSNBC today, and I've been looking for the segment all day. It was so powerful. Everybody should see that.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm constantly thinking and analyzing. It just comes from decades upon decades of consuming news and current events information. What's between the lines? What's not being printed here or spoken here? And so, like I said, this is the month in which we've seen, for the first time, a former president indicted under the Klan Act for trying to disenfranchise tens of millions of voters all across the United States. The Klan Act. Well, that part of the Klan Act was the part of the Klan Act that dealt with legal remedies. There was, however, other legislation that empowered President Ulysses S. Grant to send federal troops into the South and to militarily and violently suppress white supremacist organizations. Which the troops did with considerable efficiency. And that realization gave me some rather stark perspective. And I know sometimes I live in the past. Sometimes I maybe spend too much time traipsing around in the fields of history looking for perspective. Problem is, it's there. I mentioned the ascension of Rutherford B. Hayes to the presidency and the deal that was cut in order to get him the job. Funny how we don't remember much about the presidency of Rutherford B. Hayes, save for that sad fact that his ambition to become president of the United States was so overweening that he was willing to sell out the rights of millions of Americans just to acquire fleeting power. But alongside the withdrawal of troops and the end of Occupation 1.0, Reconstruction 1.0, the Congress passed a law called the Posse Comitatus Act that said that the United States military could no longer ever be used as law enforcement in the United States of America. And thus developed our system of local police with its own bloody body count, and in which court after court after court have ruled that police departments have no obligation whatsoever, no legal right, no legal duty to protect anyone from criminal violence. But it becomes readily apparent, and I take no joy in saying this, that we have been right all along here at the Horn. America has a Nazi problem, a white supremacy problem. Kamala Harris, Vice President Harris, is correct when she says that it is deliberately fostered. We need some means of eliminating it. Brutally. With extreme prejudice. I have reached the point where I don't think that there is any redeeming quality whatsoever to a Nazi in this country. There is no way in this country that this country is any way, any iota, any scintilla juris better for having the life of people who have adopted Nazism in it. And honestly, it needs to be purged. And I use that word advisedly, knowing full well what I am saying. Nationwide, doors should be smashed in. These Nazis, these white nationalists, should be arrested, should be rounded up, and dealt with, perhaps sometimes in summary fashion. Because frankly, in the late 19th century, that's what we did with the Klan, and the Klan disappeared for rather a long time, only arising as a political movement in the 1920s. But never able to fully achieve the status that they had held. Sure, they did their evil. God knows they did. The murder of little black girls at a Baptist church in Birmingham. And you know, it was pointed out over the weekend that it was after the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. It was after that in August 1963. It was September 1963, when Klansmen bombed the Baptist Church in Birmingham and killed those little black girls who were scrubbed clean and wearing their Sunday best, blew them to Kingdom Come, stole their universe from them. A couple of years later, having driven, and I mentioned her last week, having driven civil rights marchers after the March on Selma, that four Klansmen in an automobile pulled alongside a car being driven by Viola Liuzzo and put two bullets in her head. And one of the men in that car was an FBI informant. You know, working for J. Edgar Hoover, who never lifted a finger. And watched the murder proceed apace. This is only going to get worse. Our gun problem is only going to get worse. And more monkey-up DeKlantises are going to spring up across the country. They've already sprung up.
Governor Taint Reeves in Mississippi.
Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw in Alabama.
Governor Jethreen Bodine in Arkansas. Greg Aspott in Texas. My very own Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice. In no way, shape, form, or fashion do we believe that 21-year-old boys shouldn't have AR-15s, even if they are Nazis here in West Virginia. He didn't say that, but he would. And it will not end until it is stopped. Is it that hard to come to grips with? We can't talk our way out of this. We can't plead our way out of this. The boards on the Russian-owned platform Telegram are constantly, absolutely ablaze with white supremacist, white nationalist, Nazi ideology. And somehow people think we're going to talk our way out of this. Flavio found the conversation with Representative Angie Nixon. As she called out, monkey up, let's check in and see that moment. Here. That moment. Sorry, sometimes I forget it's a radio program. Now, wait a minute. Ah, there it is. Sometimes they hide the mute button. Once again,
Right now is Florida State Representative Angie Nixon, who represents the district where the shooting took place. Thank you for being with us. I'm so sorry that you're joining us under these circumstances for the entire community. I want to ask you, Governor DeSantis just spoke about the shooting a short time ago. Let's play part of it.
Florida, the state, and its people condemn the horrific racially motivated murders perpetrated by a deranged scumbag in Jacksonville at the Dollar General store.
Ooh, he said scumbag. Doesn't he sound like a butch robot? Why do you say the people of the state of Florida condemn it? Hate to break it to you, you little twit, you twerp. But there's a shit ton of people in the state of Florida who do not condemn it and wish there had been more. A ton of people in Florida who not only don't condemn it, but are eagerly waiting for the next one. You little Klansman. Never mind. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Perpetrating violence of this kind is unacceptable, and targeting people due to...
That's another thing. We're not going to get through it. I will play the clip in its entirety without saying a word. Violence of this kind. See, these little shit weasels will always out themselves. Of this kind, that prepositional phrase was not at all necessary there. This violence is not acceptable. But when you add violence of this kind, you are implying that there is violence. In fact, racist violence. That is acceptable. It's how language works. It's all part of being a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, frankly. Of this kind. This kind of thing happens to people who have been to highfalutin law schools, and who are involved in politics. They want to make sure that there's an out along the way. Because, see, if he was to say anything about the availability of firearms for 21-year-old white boys, well, he might lose his base. You know, the gun humpers. And then where would he be? But he's got National Ruble Association money in his coffers. Damn right he does. Of course he does. He's a Republican. All right. Let's go back. I won't interrupt.
Right now is Florida State Representative Angie Nixon, who represents the district where the shooting took place. Thank you for being with us. I'm so sorry that you're joining us under these circumstances for the entire community. I want to ask you, Governor DeSantis just spoke about the shooting a short time ago. Let's play part of it.
Florida, the state, and its people condemn the horrific racially motivated murders perpetrated by a deranged scumbag in Jacksonville at the Dollar General store. Perpetrating violence of this kind is unacceptable, and targeting people due to their race has no place in the state of Florida.
What do you make of that condemnation?
What I make of that condemnation is hollow statements. This is a governor who has done nothing but fan these types of happenings throughout our state. Look, at the end of the day, the governor has blood on his hands. He has had an attack an all-out attack on the Black community with his anti-woke policies, which we know very well was nothing more than a dog whistle to get folks up and riled up in the way in which it just happened on yesterday. As I listened to him for the first time with that statement, my blood is literally boiling. Myself and other representatives, particularly Black representatives, throughout the past few legislative sessions, we have repeatedly told him what his rhetoric was going to do. And that is exactly what transpired on yesterday. This is absurd. It's ridiculous. He is one of the causes to this. This is an agenda that he has been pushing since he has gotten into office. He showed us who he was when he initially ran for governor, saying, don't monkey this around, don't monkey this up. Those type of statements, it only leads to things like this.
She's right. It was deliberate. He meant this to happen. By the way, Steve in New York says, you're right. I admit it. I hate talking about these things for the reasons you indicated, but as tired, disgusted, and in some weird way as viciously and disgustingly bored as I am, you're right. We have to continue to pour acid and rubbing alcohol on this wound until somehow, at least most of us, begin to feel our souls burning. And we have to push for actual solutions to this problem. Honestly, I would not be at all, of course, it would probably doom his reelection chances, but, you know, if Joe Biden stood at the presidential podium and said, listen here, I'm the president, and we're coming after these damn Nazis and white supremacists, decent people have nothing to be afraid of. But if you're hanging out in Nazi, white supremacist, white nationalist, alt-right spaces, you got a lot to be worried about. And all you sons of bitches who said you can have my guns when you take them from my cold dead fingers, we got more than you do. And it ain't your guns we're coming for, it's you. We'll auction your guns off and give the proceeds to the people whose slaughter you have actively promoted. We may talk a little bit more about the operating philosophy behind Monkey Up Duplantis. We have time. Ken in Northwest PA said, extinguishing the racist fire sounds like eliminationist rhetoric. I agree. John in Central PA says, I disagree about using the federal government to conduct raids on suspected extremists. I think it's sketchy territory and sort of reminiscent of the infamous Palmer raids of the early 20th century, which J. Edgar Hoover was directly involved in. Somehow, Hoover was named permanent director by then Attorney General and future Supreme Court Justice Harlan Steen, apparently unaware of that little monster Hoover's past. I saw a photo of DeSantis in Jacksonville looking completely miserable, probably dreaming about being back in Gitmo wiping inshore bark off of his go-go boots. Well, I don't know... I mean, of course, the First Amendment, you know, people have a right, people have a First Amendment right to be Nazis as long as they don't do anything, you know, to overthrow the government, when the entirety of Nazi ideology is the overthrow of the government. They paraded a Confederate flag through the Capitol on January 6, 2021, and it's only a minor miracle that they didn't bring their Hakenkreuz flags with them, too. They're not going to grow out of it. And waiting until they've killed 3 or 4 or 50 or 75 people before they turn the guns on themselves. I mean, I'm at a loss, John. You tell where, how else? Speak sweetly to them? Hey, I don't know. By the way, we're well into the second hour of the program. And Ralphs, thank you. We are $1,800 in the hole. I mean, $1,700. I was mistaken. Thank you again, Sandra. We are $1,700 in the hole. Ralphs has a $25 challenge for Donnie's Washington, D.C. trial date, to wit, March the 4th, 2024. Nitwit Nero wanted a trial date sometime after the sun burns out. Jack Smith wanted January the 4th. Tanya Chutkin split the baby Solomon-like and said, okay, we'll have a trial on March 4th. And I hope she has the starch and the courage to stick to her guns and make the pettifoggers do their damn jobs and not take any guff. And Ralph's added $5 to that challenge for the demise of, well, Samuel Wurzelbacher. Samuel Wurzelbacher? Who's Samuel Wurzelbacher? Well, back in, Jesus, 2008, was it? Samuel Wurzelbacher achieved national notoriety and beloved status among the white wing in this country as Joe the Plumber, because he had common sense merkin values. And now at the tender age of 49, he has shuffled off this mortal coil. And so there's $30 of challenge money out there. It would actually reduce our fundraising deficit, if met, to $1,640, which would be wonderful, because basically we're, for the rest of this month, we're basically half unfunded for the month. And that's no way to run a radio network, even one that runs on the last dry-rotted thread of a sneaker string. No. So if you could jump in and meet Ralph's Donnie's trial date, Joe the Plumber challenge, or some portion thereof, it would be fantastic. Let's go over to the stress line, see what we've got there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
That's you, Micah.
Yes, Micah. Had to call in on this one. So, for those of you who may be new to the program, about 10 years ago, when I first started listening to Miss Robin, I lived in Jacksonville, so that's kind of my old hometown, and I've been watching those events and talking to some of my friends down in the area. I'm very familiar with the area. I am familiar with the dollar store in question.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't spend a whole lot of time down that way, but I mean, it was an area that I went through occasionally. But I mean, I was all over that town when I lived down there. But I mean, seeing this hurts, but I hate to say it is not surprising. You know, I grew up in that area, and to say racism and white nationalism is alive and well down there would be something of an understatement.
Well, wasn't there a similar shooting year and a half ago at some gamer convention or something like that down there on the waterfront? Do I recall that correctly?
Yep, over at the Jacksonville Landing. They actually demolished that, I think, not too far after that. And that was after I moved away. But yeah, they actually did have a thing. While they were broadcasting, it was not a convention. It was like a like professional gaming. It was like an actual competition.
Yeah, a tournament.
And and it was being broadcast, and literally during the broadcast before the shooting happened, you could actually see the shooter. You could see the laser pointer start picking out. Matter of fact, I knew who got shot right off the bat because they didn't get shot on TV. It cut away just before the shot started firing out. But yeah, you could see the red dot of the laser sight in the camera footage. So I mean, yeah, this isn't unusual. Lots of Confederate ideology down that way. Lots of South will rise again rhetoric. You know, my best friend, and this was just across the border in Georgia, but really that town really could just be a suburb of Jacksonville, really. But my best friend at the time, he had a Confederate, you know, full sleeve arm tattoo, and he was always, oh, that's heritage, not hate. So yeah, sure. I mean, just none of this surprises me.
And that's not just that Jacksonville. I mean, the vast swath of North Florida, all the way from the Alabama line to Jacksonville and a little further south, that's all just Confederacy. I mean, that's well, when you start talking about over toward the west, I mean, that's what gets referred to as Lower Alabama.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong about that. I still got a friend down in Pensacola who comments and keeps me up to date on things that are going on down that way, and it's very similar there too. And I'm sorry, but that councilwoman Pullman, I think her name was, the one who told Monkey Up that, or not, who, not told Monkey Up, but was telling the crowd that they needed to listen to Monkey Up because Bullet ain't got no politics or something.
Yeah, yeah.
They need to have her freaking head examined. You know what? The Bullet may not have politics, but the asshole who fucking shot the gun does. And I don't understand why we're not allowed to talk about that.
It's too soon. Don't politicize the tragedy.
Why not? When this asshole's been running around saying the rhetoric that he has, when they're committing literal stochastic terrorism left, right, and center, why are we not allowed to point that shit out when it happens?
Well, I think we should stop playing their game, Micah. I mean, we should absolutely, when they say, you know, you can't politicize. No, no, no. We are going to talk about the dead and why they're dead, and the fact that you don't like it, well, you're just going to have to suck it up, Buttercup. Because they didn't, I forget which maggot it was that said, well, you know, they had one of the transgenders shot up that school in Nashville. We don't even know if that person was trans or not. We just know that they were a shooter. But we do know this guy in Jacksonville was a 21-year-old disaffected white boy who had taken enough time to write multiple manifestos of how much he hated black people.
Had enough time to paint a bunch of philosophies on the barrel.
Yeah, no kidding. By the way, Matt in San Francisco has a question for you, Micah. Is it true that the neighborhood the shooter was from is an enclave where many police officers live? Just something I heard.
I can't confirm or deny that. I've been out of that area for the past 15 years now. And demographics around there were actually in the process of very rapidly shifting when I left. So the truth of the matter is the last time I went down to Ponte Vedra Beach, which is another area I'm very familiar with in that town, it looked completely different than when I had been there last, which was about 5-10 years prior. So Jacksonville in the past two decades has been very rapidly changing and growing. So I can't speak to, you know, if that's a cop enclave or not.
Well, can you talk a little bit, because Ryan Perlmutter, whatever, 21-year-old homicidal Nazi, that's the bottom line, you know, was from Clay County, Florida. Do you know anything?
Yep.
Can you touch on that?
Yeah, Clay County. Yeah, Clay County is the county, I believe it's directly north of Jacksonville. It contains the cities of Yulee and Fernandina Beach. I mean, it's basically more rural, but even that's been getting built up a lot over the year. Yulee used to be a very, very backwoods kind of area. And there wasn't a whole lot out there. As a matter of fact, one of my best friends, his dad lived out there, and basically, like, not a trailer park, but like, you know, when you buy, like, you buy your own plot of land and you put a trailer on it, you know, and it's the nice double wide kind of a trailer, that was, you had a lot of those setups out there, but that's been getting built up a lot in the past 5-10 years as well. As a matter of fact, the area between Yulee and, Fernandina Beach is almost just a straight corridor of, strip malls and everything now. The last time I saw it, which again, this was probably 2-3 years ago.
And so being more rural is probably a lot more white.
Yep.
And a lot more neck, as in red.
Yeah. Yes, very much a redneck area. You are absolutely correct about that. And I mean, lots of good people. I mean, I don't mean to, you know, cast aspersions on everybody in the area. A lot of wonderful people down there too. I know a lot of good people in that area, grew up with a lot of good people in that area, and they're probably just as horrified about this as I am. I actually do need to get in touch with a couple of them and find out, you know, what they might know about all this and everything. I haven't really had a chance to yet. Yeah, it's really sad. And actually, I have to correct myself. Clay County is actually south. It's actually more in the St. Augustine and Green Cove Springs area. I do apologize. I'm kind of not feeling well today. I've got a case of strep throat, which is really fun.
Well, I guess it's to the west of Jacksonville. It's inland. It's on the west bank of the St. Johns River.
Well, the thing is you got to understand that Jacksonville and Duval County are pretty much one and the same. Sometime back, Jacksonville pretty much bought out the entire land area that was Duval County. So as soon as you enter Duval County, you're in Jacksonville.
Wow. Okay.
Hang on a second. I'm trying to just refresh my memory here. Again, I haven't lived down in that area in close to 15 years.
Yeah, I understand. It's more than understandable.
Right. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I'm just looking at its history via Wikipedia, and I guess it was founded by Zephaniah Kingsley, who built the Laurel Grove Plantation, where he grew orange trees and engaged in the slave trade. And it became a county on December 31st, 1858. It was carved out of Duval County.
Yep.
Hot Springs.
And I got confused. And, yep, what I was getting confused on is you are right that Duval County is kind of like centered in the center of everything. And then I got Nassau County and Clay County confused. Clay is to the direct south of Duval, and then St. Johns County is to the east of that. And I actually used to live in the north part of Clay County right on the border of Duval County because that's where Orange Park is. And that's, I used to live in Orange Park. Basically once you got out of that whole Duval area, Clay County, St. Johns County, Nassau County, those all used to be very rural and very redneck, but they've all kind of exploded in growth in the past 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, the population demographics show, it was in 1960, it was a sleepy little county of almost 20,000 people. It had tripled by 1980, and now it is at 218,000 people.
Yeah, no, it's definitely exploded. Mostly, like I said, spillover from Duval County. I know in Clay County, you've got, I believe that's where the Doctor's Inlet is, which is a fairly well-to-do neighborhood. The northern part of Clay County definitely started to get a little bit more gentrified in the last decade and a half or so. But then you get onto that borderline where Clay and Duval mix, and then it starts getting, you know, back into more urban settings, and you start to see more predominantly black neighborhoods and things of that nature.
Well, I guess as of the 2020 census, it is 68.27% white. So, yeah.
But yeah, suffice it to say, none of this surprises me. I don't know. It's kind of a cultural thing down there. You know, there was always kind of this nasty undercurrent that nobody ever really talked about. You know, it was always somebody's uncle that we didn't really talk about, you know, their weekend activities, that sort of a thing. You know, and I never hung out with that crowd. So, you know, all I ever really heard was, you know, third-hand knowledge and things of that nature, but it's basically where I learned about all that sort of stuff was because, you know, that element is alive and well down there.
Well, Flavio reminds me of something, Micah. United States of Amnesia from March of this year. Did we forget? March 2023, the National Socialist Florida Group, wearing white gaiters with their logo on it, written in the typeface of German World War II propaganda posters, projected on a building in Jacksonville, something that looked like a ticker tape. Why are child-friendly drag shows legal at Ron DeSantis? And the Nazis said, what we're really going for is people putting it on social media and spreading it around and pushing the conversation in the public arena. The year prior...
Yeah, what they're trying to do is rile people up.
Yeah, the year prior, they had projected a message on a stadium that said, Kanye's right about the Jews.
Yeah, it's nuts. And like I said, it's something that's kind of endemic to the area. I just, you know, Florida, once you get up into that northern section north of Orlando, it gets kind of sketchy kind of quick in a lot of places. You know, it was actually kind of funny because, you know, I was actually really surprised this most recent election cycle when things went around. Donna Deegan, who, I don't really know her, but I knew one of her colleagues. She was a news reporter for the local News for Jack station down there. And one of the other reporters was a woman by the name of Deborah Giannoulis. And Deborah Giannoulis actually used to come and read for my third grade class when I lived down there. So I knew of these people, and it always kind of surprised me this most recent cycle. Jacksonville has always been a very solidly red area. And she ran as a Democrat and actually won in Jacksonville this most recent turnaround. She defeated the Republican who was running against her. And I found that surprising as hell. So, you know, I wonder if things might be starting to shift in the area, at least in the city and the urban centers. But I just, you know, it's something that's always been so endemic into the area. I don't know how you really deal with that, you know. But if these were easy issues, I guess we wouldn't be talking about them.
Precisely. I mean, you're right. And, you know, you're in a, you know, without giving anything too detailed away, You're in a state that is solidly blue, but you're also up to your neck in Nazis.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And that goes to what I was saying earlier about, you know, there's nowhere safe.
I mean, I'll out myself. You know, we had a plot to kidnap my governor not too long ago. I'm in Michigan, which is where I'm from originally. We were only basically exiled to Florida for 20 years. And I shifted myself back as soon as I could, because from the day I got down there, I didn't like the vibe that there was down there. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are good people down there, and I did make some really good friends down there, people I cherish to this day. But most of those people are trying to get the hell out of Dodge now, too.
I ran across a post, I think it was yesterday, from somebody saying, asking West Virginians to tell him about Braxton County, you know, the home of the Braxton County Monster. Because West Virginia is more than just Mothman. And people were saying, don't. And then he goes, I'm in Florida. And my response was, well, you know, then maybe. Because, you know, at least here we have that mindset of, well, it's like the T-shirt that came out at the beginning of the pandemic when West Virginia was the last state to verify a case. West Virginia socially distancing since 1863, and on the back it said, you stay in your holler and I'll stay in mine. There's an element of truth to that. But, you know, I mean, there's a reason, you know, there's a backdrop to all of this, Micah. The NAACP, the Latino Hispanic Rights Organization, the Human Rights Campaign have all issued do not travel. Not, you know, be careful, watch your back. Do not travel advisories to Florida. And because I wander around in some little, you know, trans subreddits and the like, and I think I've mentioned this in the past, every now and then you'll see somebody saying, I really want to go to Disney World. Is it really that bad in Florida? Yes, and the individual will be met with a string of, Jesus Christ, how many times do we have to tell you? And there will be Floridians saying, you won't be safe here. If you get hit by a car, the EMS can show up and refuse to treat you because of who you are.
Robin, I got a friend of mine who just recently had a kid. They're lovely people, but they're both trans, which I thought was kind of an interesting thing, but that's, you know, what it is. But it's a trans woman and a trans man. And the woman who I'm friends with, her job was trying to get her to transfer down to Tampa. And I was looking at her like, are you freaking insane? Because she was actually thinking about it. And she's like, well, it's a liberal city and it's not going to be that way forever. And I was like, hun, oh my God, you don't understand. If somebody in the government down there just suddenly looks at you and decides that your mere existence is a threat to your kid, they're going to take your kid. You know, well, yeah, but then that's an easy multi-million-dollar lawsuit. And I'm like, do you really want to be the test case for that and have to deal with all that stress and aggravation and publicity? I'm begging her not to do it.
Jesus. Yeah, I saw a post the other day of somebody saying, well, we live in Ireland and my boyfriend wants to move to Texas. I'm like, are you out of your mind? Texas? And, you know, this was a cishet person. You're not going to be okay.
I just, like I said, it's the same situation that you just mentioned. I worry about, you know, what if something happens to the kid and they end up in the hospital? You know, what if one of the parents gets in a car accident? What if, you know, none of these situations are anything that, you know, land in something good and then add in Florida to it, and all of a sudden it's so much worse.
As in terrible.
I think we'll be on terrible at that juncture, but yeah. Anyway, I to be honest, I'm kind of still head foggy from being sick and everything. I just kind of wanted to chime in because, like I said, this hit a very close to home, and I don't want to tie up your program.
Oh, you're fine.
It was good talking to you.
It was wonderful talking to you. I always enjoy it, Micah. Stay well. Be happy. You know, Michigan, are you guys up to your necks in snow yet? Sorry, I'm being a bitch.
Oh, no, that's not going to happen for another couple of months, at least, we hope. It's actually pretty nice out here. We had a pretty big heat wave that hit over the last couple of days, and then we got slammed with some pretty good storms last week, and that brought through a cold front, and it's been pretty much in the 70s for this whole week thus far. If I wasn't feeling so crappy, I'd probably be out doing something right now.
I'm sorry you're feeling like crap. I've been dealing with some stuff too, and Annette and I are trying to figure out, do we have something? Did we have something? Because it's just, ugh, it's gross. You know, like you said, foggy.
Well, there's a new COVID. Yeah, there's a new COVID variant going around. I'm sure there's been a lot of reports of colds and flu and whatnot, is what my doctor's been telling me too. She ran the full panel influenza stuff on me today too, just checking, because apparently that's been a thing. So definitely get your shots and everything updated this year. I get the impression it's probably going to be a little bad for various stuff. And folks, please, please, please dig into your change purses. Robin needs help.
The horn is in a very deep hole. But thank you for being
good talking
so kind
to you, Robin.
Take care, Micah. Bye now. Feel better.
Bye.
That's Micah calling from up in Michigan. She's talked to me off air about growing up down there where she was. And no, that's a redneck hell. Might as well be. Yeah. I mean, just because you're on the Atlantic seaboard doesn't mean that you don't have a bunch of Nazis. Scary Jerry with a note. By the muzzle's red glare. By the way, there is a challenge on the table. $30. It'll get us down to $16.40 to go. And I am, I'm just obsessed with trying to keep the bills paid and trying to make, really want to make it to the 20th anniversary of this program. That'll be February the 4th. And it's been hard, no doubt about it. And so far, we are goose egg. By the muzzle's red glare, Scary Jerry writes, at least it was only the Dollar Tree. At least I'm in the southern part of the state. At least I'm in a 95% people of color neighborhood. At least my children are mixed. At least MAGA country is at least 45 miles away. At least there's a Cat 5 hurricane coming. And Ruin DeSantis will have to take off his hood and put on his go-go boots and show America what looking like Florida looks like and what a bad, terrible piece of shit governing looks like. I love this state. I hate our government. And that helicopter that crashed today, one Friday on the front porch, Scott corrected me a mere 5 blocks from that place. Just going to listen today. Tornado warnings in the distance. Be well, Horn family. Let the change jingle. Let's get that 1700 down. We need the horn now. Oh, goodness me. Scary Jerry attaches... Alert, hurricane local statement issued August 28th, 5:03 p.m. by National Weather Service Miami. This product covers South Florida. Tropical storm Idalia continues. Idalia? I don't know. At this point in time, they're just making up names. Have we used Idalia yet? No, because that's patented. Well, take the fucking V off. Tropical storm Idalia continues to strengthen. Changes to watches and warnings. Tropical storm warning, storm surge watch are in effect for coastal Collier County. Tropical storm watch is in effect for inland Collier County. The storm is about 430 miles southwest of Miami, Florida, or about 390 miles south-southwest of Naples. Storm intensity presently 70 miles per hour and continues, and that's the important part, continues to strengthen. Could be a whopper. And I find myself disappointed in myself with those sorts of things. USA Today, Dateline, Fort Myers, Florida. Idalia was intensifying Monday and threatened to slam across Florida's Gulf Coast sometime Wednesday as a major hurricane with life-threatening storm surge and dangerous winds. So that's 2 days. It's forecast to reach hurricane strength later today, which may be now for all I know. Starting Tuesday morning, the chances are it will intensify rapidly. Landfall midday Wednesday, somewhere along the Big Bend and Nature Coast. It could become the second Cat 3 or higher hurricane to make landfall there in the past 170 years. USA Today's forecaster said Idalia will likely bring catastrophic surge to a broad swath of the south of the west central Florida and Big Bend coastline, at a core of destructive winds to an unlucky but still unknown swath of North Florida. So hurricane watches are in effect along 300 miles of the Florida coast from Longboat Key south of Tampa to the Ochlockany River near Tallahassee. And Cat 3 means the storm will have reached at least 111 miles per hour. Tampa's already under a state of emergency. There's a 7-foot storm surge possible in Tampa Bay in the area. And the eastward direction of the storm, once it slams into the Gulf Coast, could make matters considerably worse. Pasco County, north of Tampa, is under a mandatory evacuation for some areas, especially for people who are living in manufactured or mobile homes or RVs. They're talking about an 11-foot surge over parts of the Florida shore. And the reason I said that I'm ashamed of myself is that part of me is saying, well, you know, it's not like y'all acknowledge climate change is real. More people voted for Monkey Up Duplantis this time than did the last time, because they really love the cruelty. They really get off on the hate. And that's just unfathomable. But then, you know, it's like something Boss Man Wayne said to me when we were on the phone the other day. He said, look, it's still West Virginia, Robin. Anytime you're in a group of people, look around, count to 10. The first 7 people you count voted for Donald Trump, wherever you are. And the numbers are similar for Monkey Up down in Florida. So the Jacksonville shooter, Angie Nixon, is right. A substantial majority of Florida voted for that shooting. I know they don't like to hear it. People seldom like to hear the truth when it involves a humongous personality flaw. But it's true. Just true. So we're approaching the third hour of the program. Like I said, a goose egg. Lou up in PA, hey Lou, tells us that Joe the Plunger reportedly died from complications relating to pancreatic cancer. I really would like to know who ended up paying for his health care. I suspect, by the way you write that, Joe, that you damned well know who paid for Joe the Plumber's health care. Yeah, that's one of those weird things I do. I look at old photos, And I try to calculate how old the person was in the photo. And then I look and I say, well, they'd have... I do this with my parents. And I think about how many more years of life they had left. It's really kind of mind-bending when you look at them as young people. And you feel a certain sense of sympathy and love. Y'all had no idea what was coming for you. I mean, you can do the same thing with portraits, you know, pre-photography. I do the same thing with me. Found a photo of me and my dad. Like, oh my God. You had a ride in front of you, Robin. And so I say that wondering if back when he was basking in the glow, the surge, if you will, we were just talking about a hurricane, of adulation for him coming from the right. I wonder if Joe the plumber ever had a self-reflecting inkling of a moment of what his life would be like 15 years hence. Because that's back when Joe the plumber was 34 years old, and all he knew was that he didn't want one of them in his white house. And in line with the query that Lou makes, I really would like to know who ended up paying for his health care. I wonder if he even got a get well soon card from Godzilla from Wasilla. Or anybody associated with that toxic campaign. I wonder if John McCain might be waiting at the pearly gates going, well, welcome to the forever time, schmuck. I just, like I said, my brain goes interesting places sometimes. Back in 2014, was it the 2012 campaign? Was that what it was? In which case, did Senator Bishop Willard Romney send him a get well soon card? Or offer to pay for him to go to the most highfalutin cancer center in the United States? I'm guessing no. Because the flavor of the moment is a very much fleeting thing in American politics. Ralphs tells me back in 2014, he worked at a Jeep plant, Joe the plumber. Oh, I can't stand the heat. What song has that line in it, says Ralphs? I feel like I know, but I would have to devote considerable thought to it. I can almost hear it. I can't stand the heat. I'm going to have to... Oh, by the way, Flavio says United States of Amnesia. I didn't come up with that. The late Gore Vidal, peace be upon him, wrote a book with that title. Yeah. So we've got about another hour's worth of conversation, but like I said, I'm going to have to beg your kind indulgence for a second. The stream will be silent, but I'll be back right quick. Stand by, please. Sorry about that. I thought I heard somebody at the door. I'm here by myself, and so had to go and check. For the live community, you know, listening live, it was a couple of minutes. For people listening to the podcast, it was like no time passed at all because I stopped the recording and then restarted it. Ooh, I'm clever. Okay, back into the swamp. As noted in Ralph's challenge, which is heretofore untouched, Ralph's was celebrating Nitwit Nero's trial date of March the 4th, 2024, in Washington, D.C., when he will be tried on, among other things, a charge of having violated the Klan Act. He's going to be a very busy man, Nitwit Nero. He has reportedly raised literally millions of dollars selling koozies and T-shirts and, for all I know, panties with his mugshot on them. I mean, think about it. There were women running around there, running around in 2016 wearing T-shirts that said he can grab me by the anytime he wants to. I mean, there's a market. It's capitalism. What? Well, beginning on September the 6th at 9:30 a.m. and going 15 minutes at a time through 3 p.m., Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee will be arraigning Nitwit Nero and his minions in the case in Fulton County. He will have to be there in person. So I guess that means we'll have to put up with the interminable footage of the motorcade and the motorcycle cops and the black gas-guzzling limos and the like. I think it would be terribly nice if we could stop this charade that he's some sort of special someone, but no, I guess not. Oh, and by the way, last I checked, Harrison Floyd, the only black guy charged in the whole scam, is still cooling his heels in the Fulton County Jail because bond was not set. So he's there in that, to use a term Nitwit Nero made famous, shithole.
I was really treated very nicely. They took a mugshot. I never heard of a mugshot.
And I couldn't... I mean, he has no bail. But if somebody had been there and said, well, you know, we're willing to go the bail, maybe the judge would have set bail, I don't know. Or the magistrate, or whatever they call that intermediary judge in Georgia. But recall that Silk of Diamond and Silk, because Diamond died of the COVID, Silk went the bail of the white Lutheran pastor from Missouri, but now the brother's just going to have some thinking time there in the cell with God alone knows how many other people. You know, well, story I'm looking at comes from ABC News. Let's see what the polling results were. Do you think former President Trump will or will not be found guilty of the racketeering charges he faces in Georgia? 55% said definitely will be. 18% probably will be. So that's 55, 65, 73%. 6% said probably will not be, and 19% said definitely will not be. Make America great again! Pick, 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 pick. Yeah. Now, there was another hearing today in federal court in Atlanta. This one considerably more eventful, I guess you could say. Oh, what's that, Jeremy? The price we pay. With the price you charge for the program, live and post, I feel the podcasters are getting their 2 cents worth robbed with you cutting out 2 to 3 minutes of the program. Well, the podcasters didn't get robbed. It was only, the dead air was only for the live audience. No, federal court, Atlanta, Georgia, where today, former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows did something perhaps unexpected. He took the stand and testified for hours. It was his gambit, a terribly, terribly risky gambit, I might add, to try to convince a federal judge to allow his case to be removed and thereby essentially have his case dismissed. Speaking to Talking Points Memo, Harry Sandick, a defense attorney and former federal prosecutor, said it's a high-stakes gamble because, among other things, he opened himself up to cross-examination in which he might very well incriminate himself. And the Miranda warnings apply. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. Maybe a different one. All of this was by way of his assertion that, you know, I only tried to overturn the election because I was an employee of the federal government. That it was literally part of his course and scope of his duties. So, in a cost-benefit analysis, he and his Meadows and his pettifoggers may have made a terrible mistake, or maybe it was their last best hope. Reporting from the federal courthouse today, because you can't record it, because that level of press freedom does not exist in the federal judiciary. We've talked about that. He finished all of his testimony today, and the primary focus of his testimony today, Meadows's, was to talk about the January 2nd call when Nitwit Nero called Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, and Meadows was on the line when he said,
I just need you to find, what, 11,780? Yeah, 11,780 votes, because that's one more than we need to win.
And he claimed that as chief of staff to the President of the United States, investigating baseless claims of voter fraud for not President Trump, but candidate Trump, were within the scope of his duties as a federal official. I'm hoping that the federal judge hearing this is not bamboozled by such shit as that. Talking about his job as chief of staff, P.S., not a campaign official.
It was a very broad responsibility. I found myself on defense a lot with things coming at me from a million different directions.
Wonder if Fonnie Willis's team has thought about calling Miss Cassidy Hutchinson to the stand. We know they're putting Brad Raffensperger on the stand tomorrow. That should be interesting. According to Meadows, Nitwit Nero was looking for
a less litigious way of resolving his supposed concerns about voter fraud, voting fraud, presumably in this case by pressing Raffensperger.
Maybe the highfalutin silk stocking firm lawyers have a different take on this. But as far as I'm concerned, that just beats all. It was a presidential campaign and not a presidential act. If anything, the Federal Election Commission had jurisdiction, not the candidate. But he wasn't going anywhere with the Federal Election Commission. And that 11,780 votes bullshit was an overt solicitation of election theft. It was a plea to the Secretary of State of Georgia to disenfranchise the majority of voters who had voted against him. And remember, with the exception of the Senate race against Walker, Texas Strangler, which on January 2nd had not happened yet, or the results weren't out, known yet, Republicans won up and down the ballot. So it would have been necessary for him to disenfranchise them, too. At least, like I said, at least this thing isn't being heard in front of Kaczmarek in Amarillo or wherever the hell that weirdo sits in Texas. Because if it was in his court and Mark Meadows just walked up to the bench and yacked up a hairball, Kaczmarek would find that reason to do anything that Mark Meadows wanted, up to and including declaring him Queen of the May. Guess I just took a shot at dinner in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone and maybe even poor Billable Rick's snack. Basically, Meadows was saying,
well, you know, I mean, my job was anything, my federal responsibilities were anything that I said they were. And with every passing day, I'm feeling more federal by the minute, Your Honor.
And some analysis is beginning to creep out of Meadows' plan, Meadows' case. At the end of the proceedings today, the final question came from the district attorney. Asking about the fake electors and whether Meadows had any involvement. Meadows responded,
"As chief of staff, no, I did not coordinate those efforts."
So if the federal judge rules against him, up it goes to the 11th Circuit, and from there it goes to the Supreme Court. But it will not, unless someone enjoins the federal proceeding or the state proceedings in Atlanta, it's not going to keep the trial from moving forward. So that begs the question, if coordinating the fake elector scheme wasn't part of his federal duties as chief of staff, what was? What did he do? And over at Just Security, the editor-in-chief, Ryan Goodman, posted something from Chapter 3, Section 2 of the House Select Committee's J6 report. In early December, the highest levels of the Trump campaign took note of Cheesebro's fake elector plan and began to operationalize it. On December 6th, White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows forwarded a copy of Cheesebro's November 18th memo to Trump campaign senior advisor Jason Miller, writing,
"Let's have a discussion about this tomorrow."
Miller shot back that,
"Well, I just had a look at it."
Meadows responded,
"If you're on it, then never mind the meeting. We just need to have someone coordinating the electors for states."
That means he was participating in the coordination efforts. Miller writes back and says, No, I was only doing the PR part. The real weasel.
Working the PR angle.
We should probably still meet. And Mark Meadows responds, "Got it." Later that week, Miller sent Meadows a spreadsheet that the Trump campaign had compiled. It listed contact information for nearly all of the 79 GOP nominees to the Electoral College on the November ballot for Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. He was up to his eyebrows in it. Later on, according to the J6 committee, Mark Meadows got a text message from a member of the maggot contingent in the legislature in Louisiana, Stan, who was all for the fake elector scheme because it had gone around the world a couple of times by then in certain circles, and this Louisiana legislator was, "You got to do this," and Mark Meadows replied, "We're doing it." Guilty, 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 guilty. Send it back to Fulton County. Strike up the band and let Mark Meadows face the damn music. Okay, yeah, it was 2008, Joe the Plumber. So he was 34 years old. And he was all butthurt about Barack Obama's tax plans, and then-candidate Obama actually took time to speak to him. Reached by telephone by the Associated Press, his daddy said, "The only thing I have to say is that he was a true patriot. His big thing is that everyone comes to God. That's what he taught me, and that's a message I hope is heard by a lot of people." And John McCain made him famous. And then it began to fall apart, because the media started looking into his plumber credentials. And,
"I don't have a plumbing license. I don't need one. I work for a small plumbing company that somebody else owns."
And he got to stand on stage and be pointed at by Godzilla from Wasilla. Ran for Congress, got his ass handed to him by Marcy Kaptur. And he was, but he was ahead of his time. Joe, the plumber. Because back in 2012, when he was running for Congress, people weren't so sure about his idea, but he was ahead of his time. Because back in 2012, he said, "We need to build a fence at the Mexican border and start shooting at immigrants." That would be echoed a few years later by you-know-who. And he leaves behind a wife and four children. He could have been happy. But he chose his 15 minutes of fame instead. And from God, from rigors to rumors. Nitwit Nero got on his rickety rattletrap, falling apart social media platform. You know, Tripe Social, and he sent out a tripe that said,
"Rumor are strong."
That's R-O-O-M-E-R, you know, someone who rents a room from you, a rumor.
"Rumor are strong.
Pie are round, cornbread are square.
Rumor are strong in political circles that Ron DeSanctimonious, whose presidential run is a shambles, and his whose poll numbers have absolutely crashed, putting him third and fourth in some states, will be dropping out of the presidential race in order to run in Florida against Rick Scott for Senate." Now that's an interesting one, isn't it?
I think I'd love that. Come on, let's you and him fight. And I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Oddly enough, Rick Wilson last week said, "Hot Tallahassee rumor just landed in my lap," managing not to use the word rumor, R-O-O-M-E-R. "Wait until DeSantis primaries Rick Scott." Rumor. Never mind. But, and this is a pop culture thing, I haven't mentioned this guy because it's all just sort of Yes, yes, Ralphs. Rumor are strong. For some reason or other, it just flashed on the French king and Henry V saying,
"Strong is this king, Harry."
My brain. Sometimes we talk about pop culture things here. Sometimes, So we had the whole try that in a small town kerfuffle. And then Jason Aldean got kind of burnt to the ground over the fact that it wasn't even his song. And he's definitely not from a small town. And all of a sudden, from Farmville, Virginia, which I actually know where it is. Pretty sure I've been there. I think it's in Augusta County, isn't it? I have a soft spot for Augusta County. No, it's in Prince Edward and Cumberland counties. Oh, well, never mind. Anyway, there's red-bearded, redneck, never-heard-of-before country star who rocketed to the top of the charts, grabbing the attention of disaffected white folks everywhere with a tune called Rich Men North of Richmond. Get it? That's the kind of thing that comes to you when you're on about your seventh Bud Light. Rich Men North of Richmond. Oliver Anthony. And the song just blew up. No label, no agent, no nothing. And shot to the top of the charts. Just blew right past Jason Aldean. And he sings about working overtime for BS wages. Because I guess Redbeard the country star. Good God, I think you could strain soup out of that thing. Well, he tapped into it once again because it's a really good dollar. He tapped into white angst and white lower class resentment described in an article at Right Wing Newsweek as
millions of forgotten men and women all over the country who understand it because it's about our lives, about a ruling class that has made us dependent on it and then left us to wither in the sun like an old weed. A ruling class that has shuttered the factories we worked in and increased prices to the point where we're all in debt and can no longer even afford decent food to eat that isn't full of chemicals. Oh, who is this Shakespeare? Noah Krochvik. I'm not kidding. His name is Krochvik. And, of course, it blathers on and on and on about white grievances. Without saying white, but you figure that out pretty quick. And then, because it's ever so fashionable, punches down on people who accept the pittance that comes from the shambles that is our social safety net. And now that he's getting some attention
Oliver Anthony says,
our government likes to throw money at problems without conceptualizing.
Ah, you lost him at conceptualizing, Oliver. Real
solutions that connect to the individuals involved. The lyrics contrast that some are left without any, and others are only left with the option of living on junk food.
It's posted alongside a picture of like a Little Debbie pie cake cookie thingy.
Meanwhile, our farming industry has been corporatized and sold out.
Oh, shut up and leave that to Willie Nelson and John Mellencamp, for God's sakes.
Food is entirely too expensive, especially in a nation with abundant farmland. In politics, it's all about keeping people who are dependent, dependent.
Wow, he must have heard Rush Limbaugh as a little boy. Or maybe he's listening to, Velveeta King talking about keeping the black people down on the welfare plantation. Oddly enough, this could be a really meaningful song if Ollie had any notion of what the real working class struggle is. Spend a little time listening to, I don't know, Ollie, Woody Guthrie. Hell, spend a little time listening to Bruce Springsteen. And of course, last week when they had their little pageant up in Milwaukee, there they were, playing Rich Men North of Richmond. Because, of course, that's got to be Washington, D.C. Or maybe it's the Jews in New York City. New York City! Or the queers. Because, see, that's the fun thing with one of these white grievance tunes. The listener can always just sort of factor in whoever it is that they hate at that given moment. Because once he realized that he was about to be, that he was being lionized by the same people who march around with tiki torches in Richmond, hollering, Jews will not replace us, they backpedaled a little bit.
And he said, well, diversity is what makes us strong.
Well, monkey up, DeKlantis hates you now, Ollie. And then the white wingers jumped on him and,
yeah, you're a fake.
What's hilarious is that Noah Krochvik, the article says, is a co-director and theorist for the Midwestern Marx Institute for Marxist Theory and Political Analysis. I don't think he's very good at it. Jeremy, no, don't hold back. Tell us how you really, really feel. Subject line, redheaded fuck. That redheaded fuck complained about being poor while claiming he turned down an $8 million contract from Nashville, and in the same song complained about the said poors using welfare. Oh, yeah, and he wished that rich men north of Richmond cared more about the miners and not the miners on some small island. It's a white grievance anthem. That's all. And since we're on pop culture at the moment, Yeah, I know. Ralph said, oh my God, he's a Marxist? Well, this is not your grandpa's Marxism, I don't think. Flavio points out that Billy Bragg already answered Oliver Anthony. Yeah, I wish it had gotten a little more. Needs to get through to Oliver Anthony. He might learn a little something. But then again, he's not dumb. He uses big polysyllabic words. So there's that. Wonder if Ollie ever thought about trying to get a union job. That's what Billy Bragg was on about. Thanks for the link, Flavio. When Oliver Anthony put out his Rich Men North of Richmond, it's just such an awesome little play, approximate pun. It's been seen, Rich Men North of Richmond's been viewed and heard over 30 million times. Look, among a certain group of people, shitting on people who are even poorer and have it harder is even, well, it's catnip. It's economic catnip. Because it doesn't take them a lot of effort. The people who are in worse shape have no way of punching back. And while you're blaming rich men north of Richmond, it's really not about them, is it? And it's not real bright. I wish politicians would look out for minors, M-I-N-E-R-S. Well, that's why we have the Mine Safety and Health Administration, Ollie. Maybe you've never heard of it. Maybe you've never been in a mine. You're not exactly in coal country, sugar. Or maybe you're unaware that every chance they get, the Republicans try to kill MSHA with death by a thousand cuts, and that every time it's time to reauthorize black lung benefits, honey, it's not the Democrats out there, north of Richmond, who are trying to do away with it. Baby, It's those America-loving Republicans who the people you're singing to and profiting off of like to vote for, as we like to say around here, against their own interests. So, Ollie Anthony has wised up and isn't doing any interviews, or hasn't been. I sit pretty dead center on politics. So Billy Bragg wrote a song in response, playing on Ollie Anthony's own title, Rich Men Earning North of a Million. Not shabby.
If you're selling your soul, working all day, overtime hours for bullshit pay, well, nothing's gonna change if all you do is wish you could wake up and it not be true. Join a union. Fight for better pay, you better join a union, brother. Organize today, you'll see where the problem really lies when the union comes around. Rich men running north of a million. Wanna keep the working folk down. Wanna keep the working folk down. If you form a union, you'll soon find that working people are all of one kind. So we ain't gonna punch down on those who need a bit of understanding and some solidarity. That ain't right, friend. If you're struggling with your health and you're putting on the pounds, doctor gives you opiates to help you get around. Well, wouldn't it be better for folks like you and me if medicine was subsidized and healthcare was free? Join a union. Fight for better pay. Come on and join a union, sister. Organize today. It comes down to the self same thing if you're black or white or brown. Rich men earning north of a million wanna keep the working folk down. Wanna keep the working folk down. Know your culture wars are there to distract while libertarian billionaires avoid paying tax. You want to talk about bathrooms while the floodwaters rise. The forest is on fire and the wind burns our eyes. Something's wrong here. Well, they want to divide us because together we're strong. Are you gonna take action now? You sung your damn song. If you don't like the rich man having total control, you better get the union to roll. Join a union. Fight for better pay. Come on and join a union. Organize today. Don't matter if you live in the city or some little country town. Rich men earning north of a million. Rich men earning north of a million. I see rich men earning north of a million. Wanna keep the working folk down. Wanna keep the working folk down. Selling your soul and you're working all day, overtime hours for bullshit pay, join a union.
It's a hell of a lot better song than Rich Men North of Richmond, and every word in Billy Bragg's response tune, well, partakes of the truth. I got it. Oh, first cowbell of the evening. And it goes to Arnold in PA. What? Is he a fucking pirate? You know, Redbeard. Well, Barbarossa? Yeah, goes back to Frederick Barbarossa of 1122 to 1190, Holy Roman Emperor. And before that, in the days of the Roman Republic, Gnaeus Domitius Ahenobarbus. Ahenobarbus is Redbeard. Just, well, trivia. Jeremy, if you just look up The Guardian, it's from August 21st. Billy Bragg releases response song to Oliver Anthony, Richmond, North of Richmond. So, Guardian, August 21st. Billy Bragg should make it pop. Yeah, Flavio says Billy Bragg is old labor, pre-Tony Blair, like Tony Benn. I love him to pieces. Yeah, it's good. By the way, an update from the shooting or the lockdown in Chapel Hill, North Carolina today. One person is dead. The shooting took place at UNC's Caudill Laboratories. Suspect taken into custody a little after 2:30 p.m. UNC Police Chief Brian James said this evening, "Well, we really want to know the why in this case and what led to it." Innocent students had to walk out of buildings with their hands in the air. Jesus. And what we do, it was a faculty member that the graduate student murdered. Because freedom. Because young man with a gun. Another shooting last week. Biker bar in Trabuco Canyon, California. Orange County, California. We here at this program have proposed that the name of Orange County be changed to Mississippi County, California. John Snowling, a 59-year-old retired Ventura police sergeant, decided he wanted to murder his estranged wife, who was known to hang out at the Cook's Corner Bar, which apparently was a biker bar. The guy had killed three people. Snowling had two handguns and a shotgun because freedom. Because the National Rifle Association is, in fact, the most well-funded, most powerful domestic terror organization in the United States. He battled it out using the shotgun. He battled it out with the cops, his former brothers. Six people were injured. Two, as of the reporting, were in critical condition. A man who was shot in the chest and a woman shot in the jaw. Four other guys were stable. He pumped eight rounds into his wife and her friends at a table. His estranged wife was shot and injured, but she did survive. Two members of the M Street Band were hit and hospitalized, but they were stable. They were playing the Wednesday night $8 spaghetti special. Because, you know, it's America, and this is just... Well, this is just how we settle disputes. Right? Becomes exhausting. Oh, but some good news. You know how MAGA stands for more attorneys getting attorneys? Well, it's off to the joint in the Buckeye State in Shaker Heights. A maggot tax lawyer is up the river. 53-year-old James Saunders was convicted. Wait for it. Of illegally voting twice. Voter fraud! Cuyahoga County Common Pleas Judge Andrew Santoli coupled James Saunders' sentence with a $10,000 fine as punishment. And the judge said, "You violated the premise that every citizen, regardless of race, creed, or religion, speaks in one voice. Your opinion does not outweigh other citizens." So in 2020, and then again in 2022, Saunders voted illegally in both Ohio and Florida. He did it in the 2020 presidential election. Then he did it again in 2022 in the midterm. For all their barking and braying about, remember, it's all either confession or projection. In this case, it's confession. For all their barking and grunting and bellowing and bleating and braying and hooting about the voter fraud them people is committing and all the voter fraud in Georgia. You just listen to President Trump. He'll tell you all about it.
Well,
there's a lot of maggots who are doing it, probably more than anybody else. You got them in Pennsylvania trying to vote their dead mother. A whole handful of them in 2021 at the Villages in Florida for illegally using absentee ballots. Confession or projection? Every time. And we have an arrest to report. More good news. A member of the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters executive staff is being recommended for 13 months in the Stir up in Michigan. Keep feeling better, Micah. Plymouth, Michigan resident Timothy Teagan, aged 25, U.S. District Judge Sean Cox was due to sentence Teagan today. I don't have the update on him. But he was arrested by the FBI counterterrorism group because of plans he was involved with to disrupt the 2022 midterms and attack politicians. He's been cooling his heels in jail since November, which likely cost him his job as a Domino's pizza driver. The FBI identified him as a heavily armed, dangerous drug user with a history of weapons possession and an arsenal of weapons, including an AR-15, at least one Glock handgun, and a sword. Assistant U.S. Attorney Simon Mosin, in the sentencing memorandum, says he cannot control his anger and he is fully capable of using weapons, both blades and firearms. I have a photograph of him standing in front of the old executive office building in D.C. with his luau shirt on, a knit cap over his head, long stringy brown hair sticking out from underneath it, and an AR-15. Maybe that's not the executive office building in D.C., because I don't think you can do that. Sure looks like it, though. And Tegan is a high-profile member of the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters executive staff. He was part of the People's Convoy, Tan 4 rubber duck, that tried to bring America to a standstill over masks. And it was Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters executive staff members who took part in the kidnapping plot against Governor Gretchen Whitmer because they wanted a second civil war. He pled guilty to being a drug user in possession of a firearm and ammunition, also with making a false statement while acquiring a firearm. He's looking at a max of 15 years, but, well, the federal prosecutors made a plea agreement with him and agreed to ask for a 13-month sentence. His pettifogger must have been pretty good, a guy named Todd Shanker, who said, you know, this is just a young man struggling with alcohol and substance abuse and dealing with a turbulent family life. I mean, before he got arrested, right? He was just driving pizzas around, and he was going to leave the Boogaloos. Wait for it. This is good. And start a local militia focused on community service. Huh? Which? But while he's been in the joint since November, he's completed, I don't know how you do this in such a short period of time, a drug and alcohol program, and he's gone to a domestic violence program. Because he was originally arrested for domestic violence. When officers arrived at the residence, they observed Timothy Tegan's father, Jonathan Tegan, covered in blood. He'd been bitten on the forehead and repeatedly punched. That's when the FBI decided to search the house, and they found an AR-15, dozens of rounds of ammunition, only dozens, marijuana and drug paraphernalia, including bongs, had body armor, Boogaloo flags, patches, gas masks, a plate carrier vest. Back in July, he bought a Glock and denied being a drug user on the form. It's never the crime, it's always the cover-up. So 13 months federal time for a little pissant who, quote, has a, this is according to the sentencing memo, mind you, has a chronic criminal record, a long history of violent conduct towards family and acquaintances, a serious drug addiction, and has violated numerous court orders, all of which he has accomplished before turning 25 years old. And he's going to do 13 months. Oh, this is one of those stories. And he'll probably get time served since November, so let's see. That's 2, 10. Oh, shit! He's just going to get out! Well, bless his heart. Wonder if they'll give him his AR-15 back, or maybe he can paint some swastikas on it. Jesus. We don't have time this evening, but at some point, maybe tomorrow, Titanic Tuesday, of course, maybe we'll talk about Luis Rubiales, who's apparently a fan of Donald Trump, because after the Spanish women's football team won the World Cup, he went right up to Aitana Bonmati and planted a big old kiss right on her.
You know, sometimes you just have to take a tic-tac, because you want to be ready for those moments when there's spontaneous kissing.
You know, it's almost like women don't have a right to bodily integrity. If the head of the Spanish Football Association wants to come up and play some tonsil hockey with you, well, just, I don't know, think of Granada. Jesus. So that's the program. We did not want for content. Ralph's is going to extend her challenge. So that'll be on the table for the overnight crew and for tomorrow if it's not met by then. Thank you, Ralph's. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to those who make the challenges. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks in the chat room this evening to Roger. Thank you so much. Thanks to our news ninjas. Hey, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, with the podcast, like and subscribe, leave a comment. Put it out there on social media that you're a member of this community. Really helps. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Oh, I'm sorry. I must have gotten the name wrong. Corrections Department. Yeah. Rubiales kissed the team captain, Jennifer Hermoso, who did not like it. Okay, Randy Radar, that's fun. Funny. I found $20 in a Costco parking lot, so I asked myself, what would Jesus do? So I went back in and turned it into wine. Ba-dum-bum. We need our little giggles. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Stay safe, y'all. Get your booster if you can. Something wicked this way comes. Wear your masks, especially if you're around the maggots. They don't give a damn about anybody but themselves and not much about them. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance best you can. It's going to become more important as we move into colder seasons. And, of course, if the head of the Spanish Football Association tries to come up and plant one on you, avoid him like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.